Hello there, and welcome to the episode number 15 of Dev Conversations by SwiftToolkit.dev, where we host developers that contribute to the Swift tooling and server ecosystem. Today, our guest is Pierluigi Cifani. He's been doing iOS for more than a decade, and in his company, they've adopted Swift on Android, a topic he gave a talk in the latest NS Spain, and this is the main topic we'll discuss here, something new that we never touched. Hey, Pierluigi, how's it going?
All good. Hi. Thanks for having me.
As I do with every guest, tell me a little bit about yourself, your first steps into programming, and how you got where you are today.
Well, I started programming in college. I started doing I started doing Pascal because that's what they taught back then. Then some Java and then some C. But as soon as I saw the iPhone, I remember first seeing a first generation jailbroken iPhone running the terminal. You know, I understood right then and there that that's what I wanted to do. And as soon as I had a chance in the company I was working for at the time, which I was doing C and C++, to jump wagons and do iOS, I started doing that. I remember like having headaches trying to understand how UI table view worked under the hood and how to write one. I have loved doing that ever since. Back in Objective-C, you had to manage threads with pthreads, then came on Objective-C. Grand Central Dispatch was already a huge improvement. And yeah, I've been writing iOS ever since 2013, I think. And on this last year, I've been basically experimenting with Swift on Android. And that's what I talked in Logroño in NS Spain this year.
Right. We'll leave a link to the talk because it can be a good introduction for this episode or for people who want to hear more about it. And let's jump right into the subject of cross-platform IBIT solutions. I'm personally not a fan of these solutions on iOS, at least. So what are your thoughts on that on the iOS side?
I also don't like them at all. I think they constrain the quality of the product you can ship to your customers. And that's something I've been very vocal against throughout my career in every job position I've ever held, that as long as you go there, you're basically stuck with that vendor, that technology that will not be updated as fast, that users will feel the difference when they use your product. And I've been lucky enough to never have it, always been doing native iOS development. And I hope to keep it that way. One reason I think I'm doing Swift on Android is to be able to keep it that way, actually. And because all cross-platform solutions come with some sort of trade-off, and especially on the iOS side, where, I mean, at least I can just immediately feel it as soon as I launch the app. And also, like, the tooling and everything, it's just a step backwards. That's why I've been doing Swift on Android, because it will make commercial native iOS developers more economically viable.
So if you're not a fan of cross-platform on iOS, why is it different on Android, though?
Well, first thing you need to know is that if your app is using Swift on Android, that means that your iOS app is unaffected by the cross-platform decision that you're taking on Android. Like the iOS app, after you ship it to the store, you can just download the IPA, crack it open, and you will see it's just an iOS app, like pure Swift, everything regular. There's no difference there. And on Android, you can still use... you can write the core of your app in your business logic, your networking, your serialization, your keychain handling, all of that in Swift, and just have the UI written in Compose, which will look and feel native also on that platform.
But then we can do the opposite question. Why not KMM on iOS? Why not KMM, for those who don't know, it's Kotlin multi-platform. We could use Kotlin to write the business logic and interface with Swift UI, for example?
That is a great question. This answer is personal. And the answer to me is that because on KM, you have to use Kotlin and not Swift. And Kotlin is a fine language. It's a nice language if you're coming from Java. It's a language designed to run on top of the JVM. So it has all of those constraints baked into the language, and there's basically no way around those. That translates to the fact that at least I personally find Kotlin code way less expressive than Swift code can be. If you ask an Android developer what was the Kotlin transition like from Java to Kotlin, they will basically say, what transition? There was no transition. Everything was just super, super fast, super immediate. On the iOS side, the transition from Objective-C to Swift was painful. Huge. Was mm-hmm. painful because the language is not built on top of Objective-C. Swift is not Objective-C 3.0. Like, it's a completely different paradigm, completely different thing. It had a completely different runtime. And that's why it has powerful generics. That's why it has enum with associated types. It has value type semantics. That's why it has all that crazy good performance that we get. You get to write Swift. That's basically the reason why I'm so thrilled with this advancement.
Advocate for that.
With this advancement in the Swift ecosystem. Because it's very, very important for us to keep writing, well, at least to me personally, to keep writing code in Swift, because I enjoy it very, very much. I have open source projects that I started in 2016, and they're running on Android as we speak. So that's very, 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 very nice to see happening.
So let's get a little bit into the technical details of it. Last time I saw KMM, someone on my team showed me it. Basically, it's a Kotlin code that gets translated into Swift code. Right? How it's working nowadays, KMM?
KMM, I'm not an expert here, but what it does is that Kotlin is a JVM, Java Virtual Machine based language, right? So the fact it compiles down to that, but it also can compile down to native code, like to like binary, it can be run anywhere that Linux or Unix runs. And what then when you export your Kotlin multi-platform framework for it to be consumed on iOS, well, you need to be very careful when you write a Kotlin multi-platform code, because some dependencies are not there available on iOS, which is the same thing that happens on Swift on Android, by the way. But as soon as you get that thing to compile, then there's an extra step that generates, it used to generate Objective-C headers for your code. So you'll be able to call that code with Objective-C headers. Then Xcode will automatically generate Swift symbols
Comfort
for those objectives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now that they are generating Swift headers automatically, .swift interface instead of Objective-C interface. But I think that's relatively new. But conceptually, that's what KMM is. It creates a black box, a framework, the XE framework that you can then import into your Xcode project and use that to call your shared business logic. We tried it in my company maybe in 2021, 2022. I don't remember the exact date, but it was around those years. Swift concurrency was basically ready to go, and Kotlin didn't have the code routines. I don't remember exactly what happened during those years that made me just kill that proof of concept.
And speaking of proof of concept, how was your proof of concept for Swift on Android? Like, what were the first steps that you took, the initial setup? Where did you even begin from?
I had this Skip toolchain, which is a company that vends Swift on Android toolchain, on my radar for a while now, because they started with transpilation, which basically means translating each line of code for Swift to the equivalent Kotlin version. But it felt too complicated or too brittle, because you also, since you had to translate your Swift into Kotlin, you couldn't use, you know, generics, you couldn't use enums, you couldn't use protocols with constraints, with associated types. So you had a bunch of constraints that were just not feasible for us to use on our code base, which, you know, use plenty of that. So as soon as they developed a new version that enabled you to use, I would say, regular Swift and to compile that into machine code for Android, I started digging into that and started porting the open source Swift packages that power all of our clients' apps. The process was slow, because at first you just run the test on the emulator. If they pass, you kind of hope for the best. After the two open source projects that power all of our iOS apps were compiling and running on Android, we started taking a look into one of our clients' apps. And one of them was, again, heavily modularized. So we were able to just pinpoint to the
piece by piece
core package of it. And we started with, you know, the simplest one. And once that was done and it was compiling and the tests were passing on Android, we couldn't wait to try it out. So the first proof of concept was for Naturitas, which is an e-commerce application, and that we managed to both the iOS and the Android code base. And the proof of concept was very, very simple. The app has some sort of, we call it the home screen, which has some sort of banners where the products on sale or recommended products, a list of categories.
Like
it's basically
feed,
what you expect.
Some sort
yeah,
of
correct. Yeah, what you expect to see when you launch an e-commerce app, okay? And but all of those elements are referenced using a deep link. Marketing people use a URL like HTTPS, naturitas.es/something as the deep link, a web deep link, that which we then convert into a native enum with associated type into like, you have to go to this screen or that screen. Mm-hmm. So we had two implementations of that, one in Kotlin for Android and one in Swift for iOS. And that has historically been very, very challenging to keep up to date and keep working as
both
expected on both platforms. Yeah, correct. Because maybe once they make a change, we change on the iOS code base, but the Android guy is on vacation, or maybe I was in paternity leave and the Android person changes. So it was a challenge to keep that simple business logic in sync. It's more complicated than it seems, because sometimes for some URLs, you have to call an endpoint to figure out where to go. It's not URL comes in, deep link comes out, but URL comes in and async URL comes out. So because we have to resolve the deep link at runtime using a network request. So it looks simple, but it's complex enough to test the networking stack, to test the Swift and Kotlin communication on both directions. Again, after we did the whole process of packaging up the open source projects for Android, and then the first module for Android, then we started hooking it up to the UI. So this process was, the first part of the project of this process was longer than I expected it to be. But then after we had that function that takes a URL and spits out synchronously a deep link, we were able to hook it up relatively fast on the Android side. And then we shipped to the Play Store with this. And we were very happy with the result, because we were able to delete, I think, 1,000 lines of Kotlin code. That means it's 1,000 lines of code for a small company like ours to maintain, which is, it has benefits on the long run. And we've been iterating ever since. So we've been rewriting all the authentication layer. We're writing all the store preference layer, which customizes the behavior of the app depending on where country you're in. And that's a process that's still ongoing, release by release. Every couple of weeks we ship a version, and that version substitutes one system for the other. This has been our process basically so far.
Step by step, I see. But where do you get the toolchain from? How do you even compile a framework whose platform is Android?
Yeah, the Android has been unofficially kind of supported on Swift for a while. If on package.swift, you can say, you can add like Android constraints, and on Swift code, you can put pound if OS Android. So that has been there for a while now. But Skip, which is again a company that's in America, they built a tool chain that takes the Swift SDK of the open source Swift SDK, the open source Swift Foundation, and it packages it up in a command line tool that you can use to compile and export Swift packages and modules for Android. And that's what I've been using. And that all my experience using Swift on Android has been basically powered by Skip. And which is, again, they have a great website, a great community around it. And it's a very, very good product.
We'll leave docs also. I assume they have some getting started or some
correct,
documentation
correct,
on
yeah.
it.
Correct.
And the advantages, you get everything that you have in Swift. What are the limitations? For example, can you use concurrency? Can you use at observable? Can you use generics, everything?
If you're writing a Swift code in a Swift file and without any imports, everything you can write there, it can be compiled down to Android. What does that mean? You get concurrency, you get generics, you get associated types, you get enums with associated types, you get protocols with generic constraints. You get pretty much everything.
Everything in the standard library. in the standard
everything
library.
In the standard library, correct. Everything
but that doesn't include your URL session, for example.
Now, you could also import Foundation, and that will import the open source version of Foundation. Okay, that comes with networking, that comes with localization, that comes with a bunch of goodness from Foundation, which is, as you know, has been the beating heart of Apple's platforms for a while. And when they open source, basically, the only reason why we're able to do this is because Apple open sourced Foundation, and because a lot of our code depends on Foundation. It's very, very hard to write meaningful code without Foundation. The fact that they open source it means that people like the guys from Skip are able to, you know, take it, make the necessary changes, and package it up for use on Android. Now, Foundation on Android has the same sort of limitation it has on Linux. Which means that you get slightly different localization, you get slightly different networking stack. You don't have the same networking stack as you have on iOS. Stuff like background uploads, which is one of the most nice URL session features, it's not there available on Android. Not everything is available on Android, but a surprising amount of it is. Basically, it's very, very easy to write meaningful code with what you get from open source from the open source version of Foundation.
And can you write, for example, a view model with observable macros? And how do you even access that from the Android side?
Okay, that's a great question. So what I've been talking about so far is computer science-y, engineering, basic code. Okay, but as soon as you go into how do I power Android UIs, you do have to start importing the observation framework, right? To be able to use the add observable macro. Now, this is when Skip comes in and they offer basically a package and Swift Package Manager plugin to take all your observable objects and make sure they participate in the state management for compose views on Android. So they have all the important metadata that's necessary for Android, the Android runtime, to react to the changes that happen on the Swift layer. That is a very, very powerful feature for the Skip toolchain. This is not part of the Swift on Android SDK. This is part of the toolchain that Skip offers as part of their product. And you once you do that, you're able to power compose UIs with basically observable view models that you write for your iOS apps, which means that you get to share even more of the code, because view model, the business logic is a big chunk of the code, but if you can also share up to the view model layer, then we're really
better.
We're really talking business here. So it's very, very cool.
Right. So after all the good stuff that they also have their own nuances.
Mm-hmm.
What are the biggest challenges and downsides? In the talk, you mentioned binary size.
Mm-hmm.
You also mentioned some sort of bridging.
Correct.
You have a protocol in Swift, and then you can have the implementation in Kotlin and inject back to Swift. What are the main issues here?
Well, I think that one of the biggest issues here is that I mentioned in the KMM section that basically KMM gives you a black box that you can then integrate into Xcode. This is the opposite of that, the other version of that, because you do create a black box that you hand over to the Android team and hope for
like
the best.
It's like the AXE framework of
correct.
Android, right?
Correct. So they don't get to step into your Swift code while they're debugging on Android Studio, which is a big, big productivity issue. So you better ship them good code. So you better have good test coverage. You better have good logging so they can at least follow the trace on the Android side. Binary size, as you mentioned, is a big issue. Even one line of Swift code increases the size of the final Android binary by 50 megabytes.
15 or 50?
50, 50 megabytes.
Wow.
So it's a big chunk, but I don't think that this is a big deal as we might expect, because at the end of the day, like apps nowadays, I don't know about you, but every time I update on the App Store, I see like bank apps that take half a gig, stuff like that. So it is an issue that I hope to be, it's addressed, but it will take some time. If you remember, like back in when Swift launched, even the same thing happened. That even if you add one line of Swift, you added like 15 megabytes.
Right. For each single app that you download.
And that was eventually fixed when Swift was ABI stable and was shipped with the OS. So hopefully something like that can happen in the future if Google and Apple play ball. But even that, I think that there are some things that because the main issue that with the binary size comes from internationalization, because Swift right now currently bundles its own internationalization stack instead of plugging into the host environment internationalization. Mm-hmm. So that could also be addressed by the two sides, basically from the Apple and Google side and the community, basically taking care of it and doing the plumbing to the OS. So, but again, this is a big issue, but I don't think it's a big deal or a deal breaker, especially nowadays that everybody has, you know, 256 gigabytes phones. It's not that big of a deal as it looks. One of the bigger issues that there are is that you have to, the minimum API version that you have to bump on the Android side to get Swift on Android running, it's 24, if I'm not mistaken, which made us, we had to bump it from, I think, 18 to 24, which is the only weird look we got from our clients when we told them about this, because it did raise more eyebrows than the 50 meg thing.
Especially on Android, which...
Correct, because Android
slower is... slower adoption...
Especially Android, which is a very, very different environment than what we're used to on iOS. Mm-hmm. Very, very different environments. Again, and about the platform specialization with protocols, I wouldn't count it as a downside, but rather as the superpower that you can have this, share the business logic, have the actual implementation differ on each platform. So you could have some sort of a, imagine you wrap StoreKit in a protocol, then you implement it with StoreKit on iOS and with Android APIs on Android. That will leave you to have the same consistent user experience on both platforms, and while retaining the same writing platform level code. We have done this successfully, not with StoreKit, but with Core Bluetooth, which we have an app that talks with Bluetooth to a peripheral, and we wrapped Core Bluetooth behind a protocol, and we basically write, that's the only part of the app that we have to write twice, one for Kotlin and one for Swift.
Mm-hmm. What about code completion from the Kotlin side?
You get code completion because you're basically, well, hold on, you get code completion to the extent that Android Studio gives you code completion, which is coming from Xcode, it works quite differently. Mm-hmm. And you don't get stuff like tokenized inputs from on function, which drives me crazy, honestly. But you don't get that in any Kotlin code, right? From the Android Studio side, you will see an AAR, which is again the equivalent of an XE framework for the Java world, and that works as it does for any other closed source AAR that you import using Maven or Radle or all of that. Yeah, mm-hmm. And another downside that I forgot to mention earlier is that even though you can use the whole richness of Swift to write your code, that doesn't mean that Kotlin can access all of it. What do I mean by that? Stuff like, for example, a class that has an async initializer, that does not exist in Kotlin. Okay, so even if you can keep your initializer, but you have to instruct skip the toolchain to not generate Kotlin bindings for that method, and then you have to create a secondary method that can be translated for it to be accessed to Kotlin. So if you have an API that's very generic based, that relies heavily on generics or message packs or something fancy like that, it cannot be expressed in Kotlin. So what you have to do is actually wrap it and call that generic API for the Android code base. So the Android code base will get the same runtime performance, but it will get a slightly different API. again, not a big deal. Not great, not terrible.
All right, so we spoke about the pros and cons, and every developer should pick their technologies based on what's more painful for them or and what's more valuable for them. And to wrap up, what are the things that excite you the most for the future of Swift in general and Swift on Android more specifically?
Well, I think what excites me the most is seeing it all come together and seeing finally, again, the feeling you get when you have like years old Swift code that you wrote running on Android basically unchanged is a very, very nice feeling. What I would expect for the community going forward is, you know, better integration with the tooling that Android developers have to use day to day. Better the integration that means some don't having to rely on like a black box that you have to ship from your Mac to your so they can use on Android Studio. Ideally, some sort of integration with Android Studio or, you know, maybe even Visual Code.
The platform.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Correct. So you can debug Swift code. I would love to see some native first-party support for this from IntelliJ or from Google. That would be very, very, very good. And in terms of Swift as an ecosystem, I think that it needs to basically succeed. This has to succeed, or the importance of Swift as a language can begin to fade. And because as some people are even using, because otherwise the importance of technologies like Kotlin multi-platform or even Compose multi-platform or even Flutter are making projects that are written 100% in Swift very, very hard to justify from an economics point of view. So, I talked this with many people in Spain. I mean, if you're lucky enough that your company can survive without its Android users, good. But if your company needs Android users to be able to be economically viable, then some sort of multi-platform technology will be forced upon you because, you know, people try to save costs. And that's one way people think that it will be able to save costs, even though on the long run, it may be, you know, a lot more expensive. So I think that we have to succeed on this. And I hope that more and more people try this out and see how easy, not easy, but as easy it is to get your first few lines of code working on Android, and then more and more to the point that you can deliver features written entirely in Swift and just a little bit of Compose to do the views on the Android side.
All right, I agree. I hope that this effort continues and reaches even more users and developers and doesn't fade away. We're gonna end up here. For if people want to find you, I'm going to post links to your socials, to your talk. But if people want to find you online?
Yeah, I'm more or less available on Twitter and on GitHub. I think the handle is the same, Pierre Cifani. Well, yeah, we will drop
Cifani
a link to it.
Cifani, we'll leave links. All right. So thanks a lot for joining today. Thanks for your insights. And you'll be in touch. See you next time.
Bye. Bye-bye.